The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
On Chof Gimel Tevis, the 23rd of this past month, the Telza Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Mordechai Gifter, who was also my personal Rebbe, was called to the Yeshiva Shel Malo. He died at the age of 84, almost 1 month ago. The Rosh Yeshiva did not want hespedim or people to praise him. This was something that was in totally contrary to his nature and character. Not only that, whoever knew him or stood in the Dalet Amos of the Rosh Yeshiva, no longer was it necessary for praises. Reminds me of an Eidah Yehuda where he wrote to someone, and that other person erroneously thought that he did not have the proper chashivus for the Agodas Hashas, the Agodas Chazal. And he wrote him back a long letter stating how important the Agodas HaChazal are, praising them. And he writes back, Vani Tomea, Arich Zu Lomo, Vichi Divrei Chazal Trichin Shvach. He says, I am amazed. What is this entire elaboration for? The words of Chazal require praise. However, for those who did not know the Rosh Yeshiva, it is worthy to praise him and to study his ways so we might learn from his ways. And this is something that the Rosh Yeshiva was always very, very concerned with, because his entire life, all of his enormous qualities, his enormous keches and powers were dedicated to the study and the teaching of Torah. But therefore this evening I've entitled this talk as a shiur. I am somewhat uncomfortable with this evening, because firstly, it is true I'm a Talmud, but this reminds me of the Gemara in Perekola Bosser, Oma Mar Ukva Anola Homilsa Chalab Bar Chamra Legabi Abba, where Mar Ukva said that he is but like vinegar to wine compared to his father. And there's a great distance between vinegar and wine. And secondly, I had this chus given to me by Shomayim to have a relationship with this person for some 50 years. And during these past weeks, memories from 50 years have been going through my mind. And it's very difficult to reduce this to a single shiur, even though a good amount of time has been allocated to this. But I'll try my best. Firstly, let us understand a little about his life. He was born in the United States of America in 1916 in Portsmouth, Virginia. My son Reb David
who visited Telsi Yeshiva on two occasions and spent 5 or 6 weeks there learning, would have discussions with the Rosh Yeshiva. And he told David that actually his father had come to South Africa. This was something I had never known, as a bocher, but didn't remain here. He went on to America, either directly to America or via Lithuania. He settled in Baltimore, and that's where Rav Gifter grew up. For high school, he went to Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan in New York. There, Rosh Yeshiva had a dean, an uncle, who was the dean of the institution, Rav Shmuel Leib Zahr, who was very, very close to Rav Bernard Revel, the founder of the institution. And the Rosh Yeshiva used to speak with great reverence about his uncle. In fact, his Sefer Pitei Mincha, if you look at the front page, you see that he dedicated the Sefer to him. The Zahr family had a strong connection to South Africa. When we came here almost 30 years ago, one of the first Talmidim that we had when the Yeshiva Gedola was at Yeshiva College was Barry Zahr from Emerentia. He learned in the Yeshiva and later on went on to Ner Yisrael in Baltimore to learn further. I think he lives in Baltimore and New York today. His parents, Mr. and Mrs. Zara, if I recall correctly, Mr. Zara's first name was Alec. Aleihem HaSholom. They were great lovers of Torah, and they became founders of the Yeshiva Gedola. When I found out that Barry was related to the Rosh Yeshiva, I wrote him, and I received in return a long letter in which he writes all about the Zara family of Lithuania, and one in particular, a young man, I believe he was learning in Slobodka Yeshiva, who was known as a great Ilui and a great Gaon. Tragically, he was killed in the Holocaust. Hashem Yokum Domnei. And the Rosh Yeshiva wrote, tell them who their family was. They should know who they come from. In Yeshiva Zabitzok Elchonon, he learned by the Gaon, the Ramesha Salavechik Zichrein Avrocha. Ramesha was the son of the great Reb Chaim Salavechik of Brisk, and the father of Reb Yeshaber Salavechik Zichrein Avrocha, who was later to become the Rosh Yeshiva of Zabitzok Elchonon. In 1933, upon completing high school, Rav Gifter took an enormous decision to travel to Telsi, Lithuania, to study in the Telsi Yeshiva. He was plus minus 17 years old then. Now, that's not like going somewhere today where you get on the airplane and you're there. That was a long, arduous trek. Telsi Yeshiva, this was one of the famous yeshivas, of the famous Lithuanian yeshivas. It was established in 1875 by the great Reb Lezer Gordon, Reb Lezer Telsi, who was the Rav of the city. And it had great luminaries. His son-in-law, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Leib Bloch, Zichrein Avrocha, who was his successor, Rabbi Shimon Shkop, Zichrein Avrocha. Rabbi Yosef Leib died in 1930, and his co-yeshiva, Rabbi Chaim Rabinowitz Telzer, also famous throughout all of Lithuania, died in 1931. My Rebbetzin and myself, we were in Eretz Yisrael in December And we had the privilege to once again visit Rav Aaron Paperman. He should be well. Rav Aaron Paperman was another Baltimorean, a long lifetime friend of Rav Gipter. And when we saw him, the conversation was basically about his experiences in Telzi Yeshiva. And he said as follows. The first, there were three Baltimoreans that went to Telz, and they were the first three Americans to come to Telz. The first one was his cousin, Remendel Palyakov, who came in 1931. I asked him, he must have seen Reb Chaim Telzer then. He doesn't remember, but possibly. Reb Yosef Leib had died the year before. Then he himself at about in Paperman came in 1932. Reb Chaim Telzer had a very, very famous son, Reb Azriel Rabinowitz, who also was killed by the Nazis, Yimach Shemoh. So Reb Aaron Paperman said that when he came, Reb Azriel was still saying Kaddish for his father, Reb Chaim. 1933, the third American came, and that was Reb Gifter. At that time, after Reb Yosef Leib and Reb Chaim had died, Reb Yosef Leib had left over three sons. Reb Zalman, the oldest, Reb Avin Yitzchok, the middle son, and Reb Elyameir, the younger son. Reb Zalman waived his right as the Bechor to be the successor. They were both the Rabbonim of the city and the Rosh Yeshiva. And he gave it to his middle son, Reb Avin Yitzchok. So Reb Avraham Yitzchok was the Telzer Rav and the Rosh Yeshiva during the time Reb Gifter was there. And he always held Reb Yitzchok as his Rebbe. One of our Talmidim, Craig Kasef, a past Talmid, he has a Zayda, and a Zayda's brother live in Pretoria. They're both in their 90s, and they learned in Old Telz. They will tell me about how things were. So Zayda's brother told me that he was there at the Levaya of Rabbi Yosef Leib, the Alter Rav. And right after the burial, Reb Zalman got up and says that he gives away his chus to become the Rosh Yeshiva to his younger brother, Reb Avraham Yitzchok. When Reb Gifter came to Telz, there was no dormitory. There probably was lacking many things, but there was no dormitory. People stayed by other people's homes. So he was a ben bayis, boarder by the home of Reb Zalman, Reb Zalman Bloch, the eldest son. He studied there for 5 1/3 years. Then Zalman saw him as a potential son-in-law and made a shidduch, an engagement between he and his daughter Shoshana, who was to become the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin told me that firstly she was very young and her father didn't want her to get married so quickly, and secondly, it was the custom that when someone became engaged and they carried on learning, they wouldn't learn in the same town. They'd go to a different place to learn. During the engagement period, they could concentrate better. Reb Gifter hadn't been home after 5 1/3 years. So he decided he'll go home to visit to America. Then he would come back. And they had decided a good place for him to go and learn would be by Reb Velmo Brisker, the great son from Reb Chaim. Came back to America in 1938, and then the war broke out. He was unable to return to Lita. 2 years later, Rebbetzin managed to make it to America, and the marriage took place in Baltimore, as it was time to be. He then took up various positions in Baltimore, and then later as a Rav in Waterbury, Connecticut. In 1941, Rebbe Lemeir, the younger son of Rabbi Yisrael Leib, and Rabbi Chaim Mordechai Katz, Ramotel Zichreinu Lebracha, who was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yisrael Leib, they were designated to try to make their way to America, which they did. Arduous journey through Russia, Shanghai, Japan, across the Pacific, then across the United States to New York. Their responsibility was to try to get visas to bring over the entire yeshiva. Unfortunately, by the time they had come here, there wasn't that much left to bring over. They reestablished the Telzi Yeshiva with their eminence and with American Bochrim in Cleveland, Ohio in 1941. In 1945, they contacted the gifter, asked him if he would come to the Telzi Yeshiva from Connecticut to become a magid shir, to say a shir in the yeshiva, and to help them with the building of Telzi. The gifter accepted. He told my son Rav David that even though he had to take an enormous cut in salary, he never gave it a second thought, but grabbed it with both hands. He never dreamt in his lifetime that he would be offered an opportunity to say a shir at the Telzi Yeshiva. 1955, 10 years later, the great Rebbe Lemeir Bloch, Zichreinu Lebracha, his nifter, he died. Then Remotel Katz became the senior Rosh Yeshiva, and the gifter, together with Reborak Sarotskin and Ibor Lechaim, Reb Chaim Stein, were elevated to become Rosh Yeshivas under him. 10 years later, in 1965, Remotel Zichreinu Lebracha was nifter. Remotel also was a very close Rebbe of mine. And the Rosh Yeshivas were appointed Rav Gifter and Rav Borach. Rav Gifter kept this appointment as Telzi Rosh Yeshiva for some 35 years. 1977, went to Eretz Yisrael to establish Telz in Eretz Yisrael in Kiryas Telzdon. For 2 years it flourished, but then there was the very untimely, unexpected death of his Korosh Yeshiva, Reborak Sarotskin Zichreinu Lebracha, who also was a Rebbe of mine. And he had to return to America in 1979, where he remained during the rest of his lifetime. So this is a short profile of his life. At this point, we can make two observations. The Rebbe traveled to Litva to learn in the Telzi Yeshiva at a young age, 17. He stayed there over 5 years without ever returning home. When he did return home, his plan was to return back to Litha and to remain there indefinitely. We have to understand what Lithuania was to an American. The fact is that Baron Paperman told us that his mother was very, very concerned. She said, "You're American." She came from there. She said, "You'll never adjust." Western Europe was very advanced in culture, in so-called civilization, in science, in medicine. The fact is it was more advanced than America. You had London, you had Paris, you had Venice, Vienna, you had Budapest, you had Berlin, and many, many cities. The fact is, not long after that, in the early 40s, when the United States wanted to develop the atomic bomb to end the war, they had to call them, the German and Austrian scientists, teach them how to do it. So that wasn't a problem. But when you went to Eastern Europe, Eastern Poland, Lithuania, Russia, these were the backwards. It was a real third world country, physically. For an American to go there and to stay there a long time and be willing to return, from here we see commitment, a strong determination, an unlimited determination to give up America for this. There were no modern conveniences there, especially in the small cities. Electricity was something in the minimum, paved roads, plumbing, and whatnot. Torah, it was the crown of Torah in the world. Now, this was a quality that I saw in the Rebbe all of his life, unlimited commitment to Torah and to the teaching of the Torah. He placed no limitations and no boundaries on it, no parameters. Not like we see today, that people will say, "Well, I'll do this, but maybe for a year, 2 years, I'll allocate time." No, this was not his way. I remember once a discussion where the Rosh Yeshivas were trying to convince someone to go to a far-off place, I think it was South America, to be Marvit Steira, to teach Torah there. It wasn't easy. Americans should go to South America. Finally, he was softening up. So he asked them, "If I go, how long should I stay?" They were silent, thinking. And the gifter shot like a gun. He said, "If I stay, it was a freight. I don't understand what you're asking. If you're matzliach, why should you leave? If you're not matzliach, why should you stay? If you're successful in building Torah there, why should you want to leave? If you're not successful, why should you want to stay?" This was it. He won't understand this. Person was put here. Fact is, he writes. Whenever he wrote about the great of Rebbe Meir, he says his whole life was a mission. He had a task to accomplish. People are put here for undertakings. If you're successful in your undertaking, what greater hatzlocha can there be? Why should you want to leave? If you're not successful, why should you want to stay? What is your question? A second observation we can make. Here was an American, not coming from the whole network of Litvische Hadorim and Yeshiva Knanos, comes in to tell the Yeshiva, one of the greatest crowns of the Lithuanian Yeshivas, from America, which was known as the Trefaland, and in 5.5 years, he becomes engaged to Rosh Yeshiva's daughter. must be something very, very special. I didn't know this, but just a little over a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I was speaking on the phone to his Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Shoshana, and she told me that Reb Chaim Stein had just told her, Reb Chaim was the senior bocher in the yeshiva at that time, that 1 week after Reb Gifter came to the yeshiva, it was already known he was there. You could feel his presence. There was a new dimension of Ruach Chaim, of a living spirit in the yeshiva. This is the second observation that we see from here. The first time I had the zchus to meet the Rosh Yeshiva was in approximately 1949-1950. He was a young man. He was in his early 30s. We had a group of boys. This was in my hometown, Minneapolis. And we used to, Shabbos afternoon, we would go to a shul. It was called the Mikra Kodesh. And there before Mincha, we'd have a shir gemara from the rabbi. And then, Davin Mincha. Then for Shalashudis, we used to go out into the kitchen of the shul and have our own Shalashudis, because at Shalashudis someone would give a drosha and it would be in Yiddish and we didn't understand Yiddish. And many times guests would come through town, and in those times many guests were coming, because 1950 was not long after the end of the war and not long after the establishment of the State of Israel, and there was a lot of rebuilding going on. There were displaced person camps. They would bring people over and here and there, and there were all type of rabbonim, great rabbonim, coming through desperately trying to raise funds for all of these efforts. And whenever they would come, the Rav would be mechaber them with the drosha. They would say the drosha, and then the people would come out, and it'd be time for Maariv. One Shabbos, Reb Gifter came. He spoke. He had a very, very outstanding speaking voice with a lot of volume, and we could hear him speak outside, but we couldn't understand what he was saying. It was Yiddish. The people walked out. They walked out in a daze, spellbound. And these were elder Yidden, older Jews. And each one said, there is something special about that person. Something special about that person. This was my first experience with the Rosh Yeshiva. About the same time, Tells had what was known as a Vadlach Otzes Torah. This was Tells in America. This was from Europe yet. They were great Marvitzi Torah, where they took senior Talmidim and encouraged them and inspired them to go to far off places to help build Torah. And they would take no salaries for it, just a stipend, enough to get along on. They were single. And they undertook Minneapolis as a project. We had a day school in Minneapolis. My father, Lava Shalom, was the founding president of it. But it was having an enormously difficult time. Minneapolis was a very strong conservative and reform city. So they took on this task, and a group of them came in the early 50s. First one led by Reb Chaim Zvi Hollander. It was Yossi Hollander's father. And they befriended us, a few teenagers that used to hang around. And then, a few years later, Reb Chaim Zvi encouraged me, he convinced me to come to Tells for a visit. So I came there for a Shabbos for a few days. There I met Reb Gifter again. I remember when I walked into the Tells of Beis HaMedrash, my first impression was, is how happy everyone was. Everyone was sitting there or standing there and learning, and everyone seemed so happy. I came back to Minneapolis. I finished high school, and the next year I decided to go to Telz Yeshiva. I came back. After there a short time, I was in the dining room. Rav Gifter saw me. He came over to me and he said, "Shalom Aleichem, Azriel Goldfein, you have come." And that made me feel very, very good. There was a natural affinity to him because he was an American. He spoke English. He was in Minneapolis, my hometown. Fact is, later on, he would stay in my home when he would come to raise funds. He and the Ramesh Helfen, Zichei Levracha, would come to raise funds for the yeshiva. And there were times, there was a time when he asked me and another chaver to stay in his home while he went, because he didn't want to leave his Rebbetzin with all of the small children alone. But there were other things that attracted me to him, which was not common, because generally Telz had a base of Medrash of Gedalei Torah, great Gedalei. And the Rav Gifter was a junior at that time. He was in his 30s. And also, most of the Talmidim did not go too close to him. Fact is, they kind of kept their distance. They were somewhat afraid of him. But this is what I saw. Firstly, you saw a Ruach HaChaim, a living spirit like you never saw in your life. I think maybe what attracted me, because I actually came to the yeshiva, I think I was bored with life and I was looking for adventure. And maybe this is what I saw. They used to call him the human diamond, the human dynamo. Whatever he did with all of his powers. And then later on I would hear one of his great principles that he would tell the Talmidim. Is mir mont nit from eich über der keches, so ton über der keches. Nobody asks you to do more than you have power to do. Was mir mont from jede einer is to ton mit alle keches. What the demand on every individual is what he does, he should do with all of his keches. Very important. Nobody expects you to be a superman and to do more than the powers, with the powers you have. But what you do do, use all of your powers. And he practiced what he preached. He was a Derech Ve'esa. And whatever he did with all of his keches. You could see in the Rosh Yeshiva vitality, vigor, strength, fire, a fierceness, a determination, a speed of mind that was extraordinary. To give you an example, I was speaking about my son Rav David when he visited. The Gifter then was about 75 years old. He had a pacemaker from a heart condition. He was stricken with Parkinson's disease. He was suffering from chronic fatigue. He had broken a bone and he was walking with a cane. And my son Rav David tells me, "Boy, is he dynamic." Im beziknusai biyaldusai al achas kama vakama. If this is how he was in his old age, you can imagine what he was in his youth. Then I saw in him fierce independence and individuality. He was no easy customer. These Rosh Yeshivas, even the senior Rosh Yeshivas, will tell you that. If they had an idea, if they had something that they wanted to put across, they knew that they're going to have to sell the Rav Gifter on the idea, and sell it good, because his individuality and his independence was enormous. Many years later, we were once discussing, and he wanted me to do something which I couldn't do. And he was trying to find out why. And finally, it seemed to have come from the discussion, because I felt my independence would be limited. She shot back at me, he says, there's no one in the world that has a more independent spirit than I have. And I was able to do it. He was creative. He was the total antithesis to being dogmatic. Actually, Bochrim were afraid to go to him for Eitzor, because they said he was totally unpredictable as what he might say. And they were afraid he would say something and they would have to do it. Generally, a person has an idea of what the person is going to tell him, therefore they go to him. By the Gifter they wouldn't go. And that's because his ideas were not dogmatic. He will never say things just because people have been saying them. And he was influenced by no one. I remember that I had a colleague in later years. This colleague became a great American Rav. And he heads big organizations today, rabbinical organizations. And he used to be faced with many, many national communal problems. And he would speak to all, but he was frustrated. I said, why don't you go to the Gifter? He didn't know him. Go to him and speak to him. One day he spoke to him. He said, you know, he says, his ideas are so fresh. He says, he doesn't just tell you everything that's been said. He looks at it with a whole new perspective, a fresh perspective. It was chidush. He refused to be curtailed or limited or influenced by what people said, the stream of people, be what it was. When we came here and we established the yeshiva, he wrote to me, and this was typical. He said, a yeshiva is Torah. If a yeshiva is not Torah, then it's kinyeshivanit. It's not a yeshiva. And Torah has to be independent of all affiliations. He says you must not affiliate a yeshiva with anything, with any movement, with any party, with any camp. Torah must be affiliated with Torah itself and only Torah. It was totally contrary to politics. Was an antithesis to his whole nature. Torah is above everything. It has to be pure. He was fearless. I never met someone who was as fearless as he was. During his lifetime, his public speeches, which he gave before thousands, became famous for this. I remember one time there was a very hot issue going on, very hot issue, and many Rabboni Masad or whatever it was, and it became a very hot, contentious issue. And I went to him to ask him his opinion, and he told me exactly what he held, and it was contrary, which was often, to what everybody else held. I walked away And then I said, I figured it's such a hot, contentious issue. Let me ask him. I said, Rebbe, can I quote you? He looks up with a glare in his eyes and he says, I don't care what you do. This was his attitude. I've told over the story that once during a shiur, he had just started a shiur, the sugya shiur, it would take an hour and three quarters, and one of the bochrim was called by the office. He wasn't in the shiur. He happened to be my roommate, so he told me over the story, to Talib Gifter, that there are two representatives from the United States government that wants to see him urgently. They were either from the State Department or the Department of Immigration. The Gifter was the one that knew English best, so he took charge in those days of all of the foreign students that you had to deal with, passports and immigrations and so forth. And evidently something was cooking there, and they came down. And when they told that Gifter is saying a lecture and he won't be free for another almost 2 hours, they said, look, we're from Washington or a place wherever they came from, we can't wait 2 hours, we have to see him now. So they sent an avocha to tell the Gifter. The Gifter listened to what he said and he says, Zogzei Exog Ashir, tell them I'm saying a lecture. Alright, he went back. Office sent him back again. He says, they're getting very impatient. They can't wait that long. They're here on government business. He says, Zogzei Exog Ashir. Go back and tell them I'm saying a shir. At 1:15, I will be available. He went back. The bocher waited then, shortly before the shir ended, outside of the door, to warn Rav Gifter. He said, are they hot under the collar? Rav Gifter answered, are they hot under the collar? You should see how hot I am under the collar. He walked in there, and before they had a chance to say anything, he said, has the United States of America become Nazi Germany? Communist Russia? Where you can barge into a college and demand that the professor comes out of his lecture without even a prior appointment? Is this the government that you've come to represent? And he had their deep apologies. The fact is, they might have been even afraid that he would report them to their seniors. But even with all of this, it was a person who loved normalcy. The fact is, he hated with a passion extremism. He himself, he would walk calmly, sit calmly, talk calmly. When he would be learning by himself, he would either be singing a nice niggun to himself or silent in thought. He would pace up and down the Beis HaMidrash or at home, very calmly. He was a Me'udah Bein Abriyas. He spoke with people, spoke with all types of people. One of the great, another principle of his, which he always would quote from the Chevas Halvavas, Reishi Bashamayim V'raglov Bein Chevras Anoshim. A person has to have his head in the heavens and his feet in society. And this is what he emanated. The fact is, he was a picture of dignity. The way he walked, the way he talked, the way he dressed. When I came to the yeshiva in the early years, before he was a Rosh Yeshiva, he used to wear regular business suits. I used to admire his taste in suits and ties. His conduct carried himself as a prince. He's capable of holding the conversation with people of all walks of life. As long as it was on a good level, he couldn't stand empty conversations, he couldn't stand superficiality. He loved to be besimcha, and he wanted people to be besimcha. And he said, someone who learns Torah has to be besimcha. We find this seemingly contrasting picture in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Leholak Dalaramis Belay Teru Late Filin. He wouldn't walk Dalaramis without Teru at Filin. At the same time, it says in the same Rabbi Yechon Zakai, Hoya Magnim Sholom Lechol Odom Afila Akam Meshuk. No one ever greeted him first. He would greet everyone first, even a non-Jew in the marketplace. He had another principle, which he told me once. He said as follows. He says, Echalt. Echal das is nitken mitzvah zu suchen geschreines in sich allein. Ich muss fragen geschreines darf man sagen sein. Aber nicht suchen. He says that I don't hold it for a mitzvah that a person should look for shortcomings in himself. He didn't like people that were sad. He didn't like people that were worried. He didn't like people that constantly looked for shortcomings in themselves. He says, Echal dos is nishkin mitzvah, dos is not a mitzvah. He says, if one has a shortcoming, then he has to be mesaken, then he has to fix it, prove it. But don't look too hard for it. His power of speech and the power of pen was enormous. He both spoke and wrote a perfect Yiddish. I didn't understand Yiddish well. Those who did told me it wasn't only perfect, it was a classical Yiddish. There used to be a publication called the Yiddish Avot, various Torah journals. He would write in Yiddish in them. I remember once he would speak at Shalashudis, and he spoke with a Litvish accent. He gave a Yiddish drosha, and then it was an elder Yid, an old Jew there. Then on the way out, the old building, there used to be a bulletin board outside of the dining room where they would hang articles of current interest. So he stopped, the Rebbe stopped, to read one of the articles in English. So this old Yid comes up to him and says, the Rebbe can English eichet. Does the Rebbe know English also? When he heard his Yiddish, it was such a good Yiddish, he couldn't make peace with the idea that he should know English also. He spoke, I never heard him speak Hebrew, but I would imagine he could speak a perfect Hebrew. But he wrote a perfect Hebrew, a beautiful Hebrew. In St. Louis I once met the publisher, the editor of Ponim Al Ponim. There was a magazine in Eretz Yisrael called Ponim Al Ponim. I don't know if it still exists. It goes back many, many years ago. And we got to talking. And he heard I was from Tells, Cleveland. The Gifter, he says, the Gifter writes to me. He had a vast correspondence. He says, he writes to me. Then he told me, he says, you know, he says, his Hebrew is beautiful, outstanding. This was the editor of an Israeli magazine. He spoke and he wrote a perfect English. His vocabulary was outstanding. His pronunciation was impeccable. His oration, his oratory was classical, not good, it was classical. His speaking voice was wonderful and pleasant to listen to. His volume was tremendous. Stamina was tremendous. I recall that at my chasana, with my wife in Baltimore, he gave a talk. And there was a hall with a few hundred people there. and everyone was using the microphone. When he got up to speak, he moved the microphone aside. Nobody missed it. When he spoke with enormous effort, enormous energy, enormous content. It wasn't just an oration. Enormous mind and depth, penetration, clarity, and most of all, a yosher, a straightness that would go right to the heart of the issue like an arrow. He never threw a curveball. He didn't know how to throw a curveball. He threw a straight ball and a fastball. He always would get to the heart of the issue whenever he would speak. He would elevate the listeners. He would hold them spellbound. He would inspire them. I used to come into New York to visit my late mother, Oliver Shalom, and my late father, usually in December, during the break here. And that was just after the Thanksgiving weekend in New York, which was in November. And then the Agudat Yisrael would hold their convention. Agudat Yisrael today is the largest Orthodox organization in America. They would have a convention outside of New York for the weekend, and many, many people would come to it. A neighbor of my mother's was a Rabbi Israel, a very fine young man who used to work for the Agudat Yisrael. And he would tell me, and this was for years on end, the keynote speech was Meitzei Shabbos. And that was allocated for years to Rav Gifter. And he says that was the apex of the entire conference. And all of the people waited for it. And thousands of people, 1,000 or 2,000, I don't know how many, would come to hold him spellbound during the entire speech. I remember when Tel Zer HaChanukah Sabbais, they moved from the old east side of Cleveland into Wycliffe. It's outside of Cleveland, into a whole beautiful estate. And this was a big, big undertaking. It was 60 acres, and it was the first time in America where yeshiva was moving into out of the slums. And they made a Chanukah Sabbais, a dedication, where all types of dignitaries came. And I recall there were dignitaries like the Senator of Ohio, I believe, the Governor, I believe. And they spoke. I remember the ceremony was outside. I think there was a flag raising ceremony. That was a clear blue day. Beautiful breeze. And they spoke. And then Rav Gifter spoke. And Rav Gifter got up to the microphone. They came with papers, and they read. He walked up with nothing. He spoke very quietly and very dignified. And they were like shoemakers and tailors compared to him. He didn't try to outshine them, but this was the comparison. I remember seeing statesmen, radio, television, president speak. I used to think, oh, yoy, the Rebbe will do such a far better job. During the course of his lifetime, he gave thousands of speeches, of shiurim. He wrote thousands of pages of shiurim or articles in all of the languages that he could. Each he would put in enormous effort with the sole goal of teaching Torah, being Marbitz Torah, spreading HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name in the world. A great Another great principle of his. If you have gifts, if you have blessings, you must use them to the fullness in Avedas Hashem and serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It irked him that the Yeshiva Bochrim couldn't speak even a proper English. He used to say, Afilus Fasa Medina, can they say? Even their own language they don't know. The American Bocher. That bothered him. In general, he didn't have that much admiration for the Americans. He held the Europeans that he saw in Europe were a far higher level than the Americans. He says, Europeans took their life seriously. They were thinkers. They put effort in what they did. He used to say on his fellow Americans, he says, give them strawberry ice cream and they're happy. He didn't like it. And he used to tell the Bochrim, he would tell the Bochrim, what you do, do it properly. He used to tell the high school students, you're going to high school, do a good job, do it properly. You're spending the time already, you might as well do it properly. And then there was the other great principle, that this was a great principle from Tells and from all of the Litvish yeshivas. A yeshiva bocher is an ambassador of Torah. Wherever he goes, people have to look at him with admiration, like the Gemara says in Yuma, and say, I want my son also to be like that. That it should bring people to Avas Hashem and not be merachik, not to distance people. And tells Chil Hashem was the greatest tragedy. If someone would look at a yeshiva bocher and say, oi, I don't want my son to be that. This is the greatest aveda of desecrating HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. In 1955, Rebbe Meir died, and the gift was elevated to become a Rosh Yeshiva under a motel. And he started to say more shiurim publicly in the yeshiva. And then in the middle of that year, I went up to Shir Beis. The yeshiva Gdolah had four shiurim, Shir Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet. He would stay approximately 2 years in each year. I went up to Shir Beis, and there I would hear a regular shir on a sugya once a week, but he would say it once every 2 weeks. And then a borach would say it the other week. On a sugya in the Gemara. There, I saw his keach in a sugya, his depth, his speed of mind, his yosher, his straightness. And I became even more amazed. In 1956, it was the beginning of the winter month, and we were going to learn Shubas. It was a 6 month winter month. It was a Dibur Yom, and there took place one of the greatest moments of my life. At the beginning of the Zman, he was not there. He was in Minneapolis. Actually, he was staying at my home, my parents' home. He was raising funds. This was after Sukkot. And I found out that he'll only be back 2 weeks later this month. Rosh Yeshivas used to go all over America to raise funds. At the same time, I found out that his chavrusa, who was an older senior bocher, had left the yeshiva, which means that he did not have a chavrusa in the mornings. I started to toy with the thought, maybe the Rebbe will learn Chavrusas with me. I had 2 weeks to agonize over it. I thought, nah, why should he learn with me? I was a young bocher. I was in Shir Beis. Actually, I had gone up to Shir Gimel, but I found that out only after that. And I was a young bocher, and I wasn't in the yeshiva that long. I was a latecomer. Should I ask him? Should I not? This went on for 2 weeks. Yeah, no, and so forth and so on. When he came back, I braced myself that morning, and after davening, I used to sit in the back row. He was in the Mizrachmand. I walked all the way up. I said, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. I said, I understand that the Rebbe's Chavrusa is a weggegangen. He said, yes. I said, perhaps I could have a Chavrusa with the Rebbe. Now, Rav Gifter, when he didn't want to be, he was not a man of many words. He said one word to me, when? And I said, anytime. Anytime the Rebbe wants. So again he said one word, in the morning. Three words, in the morning. That was it. I went back to my seat. I was shaking. I didn't dare to tell anyone. Except I had the problem the next morning that meant that I had to move my shtender all the way up in the back to the front to sit and learn with them. But I figured that they'll find out for themselves. Daila Peronius Bashaite. After davening, I was stunned. I see he's heading towards me. He's coming to me. Comes all the way to the back and says, I won't be here today or tomorrow. I'm afraid you're going to have a lot of such trouble like that from me. Then everybody wanted to know, what did he tell me? But I didn't tell him anything. Our Chavrusa started. We learned Ksubas. During the 6 months, we learned up 50 blatt Ksubas. Then we learned Sochim. During the next half a year, we learned up 50 blatt Sochim. Then we learned Yevamos. We learned up about 20 blatt, maybe a little more, 25 blatt in Yevamos, till the middle of the Yevamos month. We would learn, theoretically, from the first Seder, about 9:30 till about 1:15, 1:30 till Mincha. It could go for 4 hours. But many times, because of his commitments to the yeshiva, he would come late, or sometimes he would be out of town. Once a week he would give a shir to Shir Beis, and once a week he would give a shir to Shir Gimel. The next week, I found out afterwards that I had gone up to Shir Gimel, so therefore I could go to the Shir Gimel Shurim and the Shir Beis Shurim, so I would go to all of the Shurim. At the same time, I organized with a group of Bochrim. I asked the Rebbe, and he said, yes, Abad, a group where he would learn with us once a week, Rif on the Masechta. And whatever kesher, whatever relationship I could have with him in learning, I did. Friday mornings in the summer, I remember, were special, because generally we had to stop as soon as the Shliach Tzibur would get up there, the Daven Minchen, generally was always right in the middle of something. But Friday, there was no Mincha then, and it was relaxed, Erev Shabbos. He could go an hour and a half later after the whole Seder ended, and we would learn. What I saw then, though, was an eye-opener. I thought that I had known the Rebbe, and I saw that I didn't know him at all. The power of his mind, and the power of his seichel, the enormous speed, the depth, the clarity, his energy was unparalleled to anyone that I ever met. I've never met anyone with a better mind, a clearer mind, straighter, faster, deeper, more penetrating, and that could cast, the depth was enormous, and that could cast so much light on sugyas that had no light. There was no one that I knew of that could enlighten a Gemara, a Rashi, a Tosfos, a Rashba, like he could. That could say a klal that wouldn't lighten that sugya, but would enlighten hundreds of sugyas in Shas. But Lavarais there, even though he had all of these enormous gifts, and you would think it came easy to him, this was all a small measure to his amelus, his labor in learning. He never for a minute stopped struggling. His whole life, I saw, was an unending struggle. People struggle for various things. He struggled for Madregas HaTorah, to constantly reach higher understanding, better understanding, clearer understanding in the Gemara, in the Rashi, in the Tosfos, in the Rishonim, in the Gedolei Acharonim. He was a sheisei b'tzomei. His thirst was unending. When he would sit down to learn, the minute he sat down, he would start, and always from the exact place that he left off. And his mind would not stop, if it would be for 1 hour or 2 hours or 4 hours. I remember Rabbarach Sorotkin Zichlein Vrocha once had to interrupt him with something, and he said, when a remote Chai land has a fire, he was afraid to come by. He was a fire in the Beis HaMikdash. What went on during those 2, 3, 4 hours a day? I would understand bits of it. Maybe I would understand quite a bit at that time. Maybe not so much. But most of it, once I left the Chavrusa, it left me. It was beyond me. I took crumbs from it. But those crumbs, I've been building shiurim on for the last 40 years. It shows you the level of what his learning was, what his Torah was. And whenever he spoke, well, he would give musar. It was laboring in Torah, to struggle with Torah, over and over and over. He could go back and forth 5 times, 10 times, 15 times, 20 times, no limits, until he was satisfied that he understood it. He could take a giant step one day, only the next day to totally refute it, and we're back to square one. He could achieve a small step one day, and he would say, "Hind megegangen a trot weiter." Today we went a further step in understanding this. His energies were endless when it came to Torah. I can't remember when I should ever see him tired, when he was learning, and he would expend energies in learning that an average person wouldn't spend in a month. I can't remember seeing him yawn while he learned. I do remember one time we were learning, the whole Seder went as usual. After the Seder finished, he just sat there. I turned to look at him. He said, it was a week they had moved that week. He said, I am so exhausted from the moving. I am just exhausted. This, I never noticed 1 minute mashu of exhaustion on him during the 3-4 hours of learning. He was transformed into a different being with every fiber of his body, physically, mentally, emotionally. The fact is, he was a very, very strong emotion person. He was a person who the Havarusa would have moments of frustration, moments of anger, moments of anxieties, moments of storm. And then the Mei Menuchas, the calm waters, and the enormous simcha that he would have. I never thought that a human being could keep that up for so long. And his shurim, in his talks, he would start at high gear and he would carry it on the whole way like that. He didn't know what it meant to conserve energy when it came to these things. I used to ask myself, how long can he keep this up? How long can the mind take it? And one day he tells me, he says, this is what keeps you going. He said, Mizeh Haloshen, it keeps one going. This is what keeps a person going. Then one day he said, vom Shurim wird man starker. The Shurim, the old of the Shurim, were tremendous. He was very, very tense before the shir, the night before. But he says, it makes you stronger. I saw in him the Guraye, the fighting like a lion, the Chamor Goram, carrying the Ol HaTorah like the strong pack animal. The Chatifas Azeev, the lunging like a wolf. The Kal Kinesher, the Az Kinomer, the courage and the speed, the Rotz Kitzpi. This was all him wrapped in one. And he loved the Esek HaTorah. He loved the Isaskus. An argument with him. Was that an argument? He'd get red as a beet. And you think he was ready, who knows what. He'd come out firing with all guns. His objectivity was tremendous. He could argue with someone, bring out all guns, and then if you could show him that what you're saying is right, immediately he would make 100% turnaround. Was ihr sagt ist gut. What you're saying is good. Das ist gerecht. Das ist right. With them we can answer those. With this we can answer this. And not only would he accept it, he would start building on it. And forever, whenever he would say it over, whenever he would write it in his shurim, he would write, so-and-so told me this. This is his bakoshes ha'emes. This is his search for truth. He loved the Esek HaLearning. He used to have tainas on the American Bochrim. He would say the learning doesn't mean anything to them. He would say, go to the stock exchange. See how the fortunes are changing hands. See the trading going on. See the tension there. He says, that's how one has to learn Torah. That's how he learned Torah. I remember once I asked him, Pshat, in Arabein Yena. It was in Masech Tehulin, the first parak. He wasn't learning Tehulin then. But he was interested, you could talk with him on anything. And he started to think, And I showed him what the other said, and he said, no, he couldn't take a superficial answer. That was not for him. He said, Yechamol gezok pshat in the Rabbeinu Yonah. I once said what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, and he couldn't think of it. Next morning he comes with a big smile. He says, Ich nitke ken schlofen de ganze Nacht. He says, I couldn't sleep the whole night. He told me over the pshat. One afternoon, he came steaming into the Beis HaMedrash. He rushed over to me, towards the back. Everybody looks what's happening, and he looked determined. And he comes over to me, he turns the pages of my Gemara to the Marshal, and he points to the Marshal, and he says, Was sagt der Marshal da? Wie kann er sagen das? What is the Marshal saying? How can he say this? This had to do with the sugya we had learned in the morning. He says, what does he mean? He was all upset over it. He took his learning seriously. He said, the fact is, when he wrote his first sefer, I wrote him some ayoras on it. He wrote me back, continue to write ayoras, because the whole purpose of his svarim is that there should be Esek HaTorah, involvement in Torah. Zeh Beinah v'zeh Seser. One builds and one tears down, because only through this can you come to Torah's Emes, to the ultimate truth in Torah. He couldn't accept a Deichik. If he had no Teretz, then there was no Teretz, finished, until we know one. Sometimes in a shir he would say, so wissen das ist adechik. We darf lein mit das. Bis mir gefunden a besser Teretz. This is not a good Teretz, but we have to suffer with it until we'll find a better Teretz. His Torah had to be perfect. The beauty of his Torah and the simcha of his Torah and the love for the Torah was unlimited. And he used to speak about Reb Lazer Telzer, and I would see he had a special affinity to Reb Lazer Telzer. Reb Lazer, they would say, the Avos HaTorah was unending. The fact is, they write that Reb Lazer said on himself that when it comes to Divrei Torah, I'm like a shikur. Just like if there's a bottle of wine on a table, a shikur cannot stop from taking it. When he sees Torah, we used to see Bochrim arguing in Torah, he says, I cannot refrain from it. This was Reb Lazer. He told me once a story on the blazer. He didn't daven in the yeshiva, he used to daven in the shul. He was the rabbi of the town too. But why? He said, because one day in the yeshiva, before davening, they asked him a kasha. In the middle of davening, in the middle of Krishna, the blazer jumps up, runs over and says, the teretz. Then they reminded him that they were in the middle of Krishna. From that day on, he davened in the shul. This was a blazer. When Reb Chaim Brisker was marrying off his son, you know, all of Gedali Yisrael who could come were there. The blazer happened to be passing through, he came. So Reb Chaim was mechaved the blazer with Sidur Kedushi. So the world says over, because he said, as the grace of Marbitz HaTorah, he has a big yeshiva, so many talmidim, he's a teacher of Torah. The gifter told me, no, he asked the family. That's not what he said. He said, they were all Marbitz HaTorah. He said, there was no one that had an ava for Torah, a love for Torah like a blazer. And I saw the gifter would have a special affinity when he would speak about the blazer. But perhaps what I learned the greatest from this Chavrusa is to understand the Erech, the greatness of Chazal. The Rebbe Luria writes in the name of the Vilna Gaon from Alias Eliyahu. This is printed in the Sefer, which is by Rabbi Shel Polis, who was a Rav in Cleveland. He says, "Alemet b'charifes mitesef le b'chol yom chidud al chidud v'yochol litayis bi'atmei v'lach shev shuhelech v'godl." Someone who learns with pilpul, a lot of pilpul and a lot of superficial pilpul, every day he feels he's growing and becoming elevated because he's becoming sharper and he can mislead himself. But someone that learns Torah with truth and with depth to find the truth in the Torah, every day he will feel smaller. Because what we will spend long times in, till we understand it, we will go back and see that Rashi or Ramban already pre-warned this with two or three words. V'tirtzu lefi darkum b'miles katzores. When you learned with the Rosh Yeshiva, you saw most of all the greatness of the Chazal, the greatness of the Rishonim, the greatness of the Gdeli Acharonim. He would labor in them until they were crystal clear, and every letter of each word which they wrote, every letter of a Tesfus, would come and answer many, many questions and doubts that you had, and you would see what is in the Gemara, what is in the Rashi, what is in the Tesfus. He would say all of the time that this that we argue with a Xais or a Nasivus, he says this is all in accordance to our small perspectives. But we'll never slug them up. We can never refute a Xais or a Nasivus. He says to their level and learning we will never come to. There was one time when he gave a shiur, a whole shiur, on an Avdim Beluim, which many of the Acharonim wrote that Avdim Beluim made a mistake because he said something which was just diametrically opposed to what the Gemara says. And the Rebbe Gifter gave a whole shiur on it. A whole shiur, where he worked and worked to show that the Avnim Luim did not make a mistake. And he said, this is not the way one should approach Torah. He was referring to those that wrote that. He would develop a close affinity to the Gdeli Acharonim or to Rashi or the Rishonim, where you see there became almost a personal attachment that he labored so much in them. In later years when he would write to me, Maran, that was Rick Rager. Rashi was Rashi HaKodesh. Harav Masha Kosafto Zehu Kedas Harav Bikseis HaChoshen, The Rav, that was the Kseis HaChoshen. The Gaon, that was the Malach Hashem. There was the time when we spent a good part of the morning, it must have been 1 hour, 1 hour and a half, 2 hours, trying to get through some Teisvesen. It was in the second Perek of Ksubas, and he had a lot of kashas on Teisves, and he worked and worked, and finally ironed everything out. It was good. Then his custom was, is after we would go over the Gemara, Rashi and Teis is very good, he'd ask me to bring some of the Sforim, some of the Achreinim, the daily Achreinim, we'll look at them. I brought him a Kveger, look into the Kveger, and the Kveger asks one of his kashas and remains with a Tzorech Yun. So I thought we had a wonderful Teretz for the Kveger's kasha. The rest of the Seder, it was a good 2 hours, he spent trying to understand what was wrong with his Teretz, that the Kveger did not accept it. And this happened often. And whenever I would say, well, why don't we just leave it at that? He would say, Ich will verstehen die Gemara. I want to understand the Gemara the way Rikke Weger understood the Gemara, not the way I understood the Gemara. He could understand the Gemara better than me. He had a better mind. This is what he used to say. When he looked into the Rajba, it was to understand how the Rajba was understanding the Gemara. Wasn't interested in answering Rajba's kashas. They looked into Kveger, it was how to understand how the Kveger was understanding the Gemara. Finally, after at the end of the Seder, he saw the flaw in his own parents. And now he was happy. Now he understood the Gemara the way the Kveger understood the Gemara. Later, I saw in a contemporary Sefer, who asks the kasha, who brings the Kveger's kasha, and says that teretz to answer it, that the Gifter had dismantled. But this was his derech in all of the learning. He came from a different perspective. The Chazals were way above us. And our job was to slowly, step by step, come to their havana. He was a person who had so many capabilities and so many gifts. He easily could have been a great statesman. He could have been a president of Yale or Harvard. There were many people coming from European yeshivas in those days that were going into academic areas. And this would have been easy for him. It was on his fingertips. And he appreciated Chochmah. And he used it. But he held, like the Maral writes, that everything that the Chachmei HaUmeis, that the wise of the nations, have been Mechadish, have created, all of it, this is like the thickness of a garlic peel compared to one word of our Chazal. This was his life. This is, he wanted what the Chazal said. He wanted what the Torah said. He was a Mayan Amis Gaber. like the Mishnah always brings, and the Blezer ben Aroch, Blezer ben Hurkanis, was a sea chain of Mabe Tipo. He was like a mikveh that didn't lose water, a drop of water. Rav Lezer ben Aroch was a mayin hamishgaber. He was a well, a spring of waters coming up from the earth. What is the difference between a mayin and a mikveh? The mikveh, water falls into the mikveh and it's detached from its source. And therefore it's known as dead waters. A mayon is the waters come from the earth and they are never detached from their source, and they are known as mayim chayim, live waters, and therefore they have a keach hatahara, an ability to minimatahir even more so. He had such a devekus, such an attachment to the divrei chazal and to the rishenim and the achreinim, that the chidushim, the Torah flowed. It flowed, never stopping. The Talmidim used to see, they used to see this. They used to say, he never stops growing. He never stops growing. There were people that after 10 years of learning, 15 years of learning, they stopped growing. He never stops. He could never say a shiur over a second time because he would see too many new things that he wanted to add to it or to take away from it. Was a Mayan HaMizgaber. And perhaps one of the most amazing moments that I had with the Rosh Yeshiva in our Chavrusa, we were learning the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Tes Zayin. There's a question in the Gemara. If a man is married to a niece, his brother's daughter, and he has another wife also, and then he dies without children, so now they would fall to Yibum. His first wife can't fall to Yibum, he can't fall to the brother because that's the brother's daughter. But what about the second wife? This is known as Soras Abbas. This is a machleges beishamin beisilo. Beishamai said it's muter, muteres, you're allowed. Beisilo says it's asur, it's osur. And this became a great dispute in Klal Yisrael, because if Beishamai permitted it to beisilo, this was a forbidden marriage that would produce mamzerim. The Gemara brings that we made a beisib ben hurkenes itirat soras abas la'achim. During the time of Rav Deisha ben Hurkanis, they permitted the Tzoras Abbas. They permitted this woman. But Yadova Koshe LaChachomim, and the Chachomim didn't know what to do, because if they'll permit it, it's liable to split Klal Yisrael. What Beishamai permits, we won't be allowed to marry the children. And it bothered them very much, because they heard this in the name of Rav Deisha ben Hurkanis, and he was a Chochem Godelhu. He was a very old man. He was partly blinded at that time. So they decided to send a delegation to him. And they decided to send Rabbi Shua, the Achra of Rabbi Lezer ben Azayo, the Achra of Rabbi Kiva. They went to him. He welcomed them. He said, on Rabbi Kiva, he said, Akiva ben Yosef, Atoa, Akiva ben Yosef, Shishimu Heilech, Misefe, Elam, Atsefe, are you Akiva ben Yosef, that your name goes from one end of the world to the other? Shave ben Yosef, sit my son, sit, Kemeis, Choyir, Babi Israel. People like you, we should have more of in Israel. Then, Ischilo, Misavim, Meba, Alochas. They started to ask him questions and get the conversation going until they came to this Soras Abbas, to this issue. And they asked him, what should the halacha be like? And he said, like Beis Hillel, that she's asura, she's forbidden. They said, but we heard that you permitted her. And they said, did you hear in my name that I permitted? Did you hear that it was Beis ben Hurkanis, or maybe it was just Hurkanis? They said, we don't remember. Because, he said, I didn't permit it, but I have a younger brother who's a Talmid of Beishamai, and he's a Bechor Sotan. Bechor Sotan means he's a very strong young man that doesn't back up easily. And he holds it's permitted, and he is not retracting his decision. And he says, Janison Shemo, his name is Janison. He says, he's the one you should go talk to. But then he said, I warn you, Shle kapeach eskem bahalochas, don't try to refute him. Befi sheyeshi mei shleish meyes tshuvas betzor sabashi muteres. Because he has 300 arguments that Tzoras HaPas is permissible. So go easy with them. Know who you're dealing with. So the three Gedele Yisrael went out. And it was Rebbe Kiva that met him. And Rebbe Kiva met him and he asked him, why do you permit the Tzoras HaPas? What is your source? Actually, the Upneha. He brought his sources. The Gemara, it seems he might have only brought his first one. I don't know how many he brought. Upneha, and Rabbi Kiva could not answer him. Omale atohi Akiva Shishimcha Helich Misefe Elamatsefe. Are you Akiva that your name goes from one end of the world to the other? Ashrechos Shezochisa Lashem. How fortunate it is that you have come to such a good name, but you're not even at the level of a herdsman. Omalei Rebbe Kiva. Rebbe Kiva said, Afilu Lerei Tzain. He says, even to the level of a shepherd I have not come. We learned this Gemara. Rebbe Gifter said, 300 arguments. 300 proofs that Tzoras HaPas is muteres. He says, we don't know one proof that Tzoras HaPas is muteres. Perhaps, he says, it's benigla ubenister. But still, he says, we don't even have one proof. And even that Tzoras HaPas is Asura. When we give a shiur, and we want to bring a proof to a certain halacha, how many proofs do we bring? One proof, two proofs, three arguments, 300 arguments. And tears came to his eyes. He says, look at the level of Torah they were on. Look how far from Torah we are. And then he turned to me with tears in his eyes. And he said, I quote, he says, what we are doing here is baby stuff. This is the level we are on compared to the Chazal. And then, in order to bolster his spirits a bit, he said, but to me, Doch Issa, from the other aspect, we see how great Torah is, because the little Torah that we learn, look how much it improves us. I sat there, and the Rosh Hashiva was saying, that what we are learning, he is learning, is baby stuff. What am I supposed to say? People used to say, you're so modest. It's modesty. It's a very humbling experience, standing in the shadow. This was his approach when it came to Torah. Continued my chavrusa with him until the middle of Yevamos. After that, I had to give it up. Yevamos was a very, very difficult mesechta. I never learned it before. And that was a favorite of his. And it was just too overwhelming for me. So I gave it up. He understood perfectly well. He said, learn up 70 blot of the Masechta by the end of this month. Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos, he says, that's what you really should be concentrating on with many, many chazoras. What he knew so well. And very little things he didn't know. There were times when I could bring the whole presentation to him. And he would listen and he would say, how can you say that? Taisus Oktvakir, Taisus says differently. And he would point to Taisus right in the sugya. And that would totally one punch and finished. And I'd walk away feeling like a fool. Then I would sit down and look at that Taisus and say, how is it that I didn't notice that Taisus? And I would look at that Taisus and I would say, no, I'm not a fool. I could learn over this Taisus 10 or 20 times. I would never see this. Only he would see it. And that came only from going over the Sugyan over 40, 50, 60, 70 times. Turning it over in his mind and over in his mind. I said, I'm not a fool. Even now I can hardly see it. There was a time I brought to him a Meiri. Sochim, where the Meiri says something diametrically opposed to the Gemara, and I asked everyone in the Beis HaMedrash and nobody could make head or tails of it. I brought it to him and he said, Gewaldig, wonderful. I said, wonderful. Then he explained to me what the Meiri meant. I told it over to one of the senior Bochrim. He said, how could the Meiri mean all of that in 2-3 words? Sort of gifted. This was a Rishon. In 1958, I decided that I had learned a number of years now, and I want to carry on for long term. And I felt that I would have better chances of long-term learning in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was starting to open up then. There were yeshivas that were opening. Then America. So I came to the Rebbe and told him, I think maybe I should go to Eretz Yisrael. So he asked me, you lands nicht gut? You're not learning well? I said, no. I said, it lands very good. I'm learning very well. So why do you want to go? I said, well, there I'll be able to learn better and longer. He told me a principle, which was one of the great principles of his life. He said, a kranker darf suchen Eitzers. A gesunder sucht Eitzers, wird krank von das. A sick person has to look for cures. A healthy person looks for cures, you'll become sick from this. He says, if you would have told me you're not learning well, all right, so you have to look for an Eitzah. But you're telling me you're learning well. You've seen Simon Broch, and you walk away from Simon Broch, because there will be better. How do you know? What's the guarantee? Someone is healthy. He's going to change his pattern of life. He's healthy as well. And he said that was the principle he followed all of his life. Wherever he was, if he was growing in Torah, then everything was good. He didn't worry about other things. If he wasn't, then came a problem. In 1962, after 3 years in the Kollel, after marriage and 3 years in the Kollel, we took our first position, which was in a small country community called Carmel, New Jersey. I looked for a small rabbonus where I would have time to learn. I was there for a month. I had in mind that I would write, I would give her a letter. But I was busy settled, getting settled, new position, new city, small children, plus I didn't know exactly what to write for Gifter. And my Hebrew was far from perfect, and this and that, so I didn't hurry about it. I get a letter from Reb Gifter in English. He says, "Dear Reb Azvil, it's nearly a month since you left us, and we haven't heard a word from you. This is somewhat surprising. How have you settled down in your new sfeva? Do you find satisfaction in your work in the community? Do you have time to continue your learning as you desired? Drop us a line and let us know about everything." This started a correspondence which stretched for 17 or 18 years. This correspondence, I saw new cases, new things in Rav Gifter that I never saw before. Aside from the fact that I would also write to him problems, communal issues. And he was able to handle the communal issues just like he would handle the Gemara issues. But the main gist of the correspondence was in Divrei Torah. And I would do as follows. I would learn up a sugya. I'd learn the Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos. I'd learn Rava many times. Then I'd go through the Rishayim. Then I'd go through the Achrayim. Then I would write out the whole business. 4 or 5 pages. Then I would reduce it to 2 pages. Then I would reduce it to 1 page. When I got it down to 1 page or a half a page, this is what I would send to the Gifter. When I would show it to my Haverim, they would say, "Nobody can understand that. It's too short, to this, to that." And it was on all sugyas that I was learning. It was in Halacha, it was in Gemaras, it was in Agoda, whatever it might be. I would send it off to the Gifter. He would answer me, "Ato kibalti es michtovre. Hayom kibalti yikros. Today I received your letter, and I'm answering it now." He usually answered on the day he received it. He would answer exactly on what I would ask him. He would say, "Yofe kosafto, ein zenochem," whatever. He would write a few lines on everything. Sometimes he would be mayrich. These were totally sugyas, he weren't holding them. He was not holding them. It would be such a light, I'd have to sit down and be miayim, because his answers were even shorter than what I wrote him. And I'd have to be miayim. And I would spend a long time going into it. But it would be such a light, and cast such a light on all of the sugyas, and such a simcha. And this correspondence stretched from Carmel to St. Louis to South Africa when he was in Wycliffe, Eretz Yisrael. And I still go over these letters and build shurim on them. I received a fax from Giri Jaffe, our Talmud, who was at the Levaya in Yerushalayim, by Mir. He said a brother-in-law spoke. I'm sure that must be Akiva Karmid, who's married to the Rebbetzin sister. He came to the yeshiva when we were in the yeshiva, and we used to, a very, very wonderful person. We used to talk and learning with him for hours. And he said that when he would get a letter from Rav Gifter, it would be such a simcha that day. And his clarity and the light he would cast on the sugyas were incredible. I can certainly second that. What I could say even better was a simcha for the whole month. The correspondence was not in the quantity. We could exchange letters once a month, once every 2 months, once every 3 months. But it was in the quality. When we came to South Africa, my access to the Gifter was much, much less. (Clears throat) But whenever I would go to America, I would make sure to go to Cleveland to visit the Rav and the Rebbetzin. So countless times I would go visit at all costs. And there we would sit for an hour, 2 hours, and I would bring all my shailas and all my difficulties in the Gemaras. And I knew kashas that are in the Gemaras that I would get to rooting from no one. And sit and talk to the gifter, go over a whole sugi with him. And he would cast light on all of it. And then on the way back on the plane, I would carefully write down every word he said. And even the Sichas Chulin. One of the last times I came, I called him from New York, and the Rebbetzin told me to come over at 7 in the evening for supper. That morning, I went to Kennedy Airport, and they asked me, where's your ID card? And I said, ID card? Yes, we need an ID card with a picture. I said, since when? They said, since last year, a new law was instituted in the United States. Don't accept you on a plane without an ID card with a picture. I didn't have any. I said, I have a passport, but it's home. I left it where I'm staying. I don't take it for internal traveling. I said, I can go back and get it, but by the time I come back, I'd miss the plane. So I said, I have to be in Cleveland this evening. So the girl there said, look, it's not easy. You know, the planes are crowded, and it's winter, and this and that. I said, you've got to see that I'm in Cleveland this, in the evening. So she worked over her schedules and whatnot. She said, look, I can get you there, but it's not going directly to Cleveland. Cleveland's about 350, 400 miles east of New York. Chicago's another 300-400 miles east of Cleveland. I'll get you there. You've got to take a plane to the south and another one to Chicago and then back to Cleveland. I said, as long as I get there at about 6 o'clock, because it'll take me an hour to get from the airport. She says, look, it's going to take you a lot of time. It'll cost you a lot of money. I said, don't tell me how much it's going to cost, and don't tell me how much time it's going to take me. And she said, you'll have to go to the other airport, LaGuardia Airport, on the other side of the city. I said, that's all right. And I got to Cleveland at 6 in the evening, and I was there at 7 o'clock for supper. I hope the people here won't mind if I go a little over the time. As I said in the beginning, there's far too much material here for one shiur. But let me just tell everyone that if we would place one principle, one pillar, which Rosh Hashiva built his life on, I would say it's as follows. Firstly, he never came to be machadish. He was not interested. He would have been very upset if people would have said on him that he brought something new to the world. His whole motif was Maksoras HaTorah L'Yeshno, to return to the world what it had, like his forebears, the great Rebbe Elimelech and the Rambam. He saw in Telus, in Lithuania, Torah at its best, at its highest. But he saw more than that. It was an aspaklaria de meira. He didn't see just Telz the Torah, but rather he saw Telz as a vehicle to bring in Torah Mishinai. We said that Litha, they were the backwards of Europe, but that was physically. Not spiritually. You know, Every country had its famous yeshiva. Berlin had its Hildesheimer Academy. Pressburg. Hungary had its Pressburg. Poland had its Lublin. Lithuania was a very small country. And it was constantly being tossed around between Poland and Russia. The borders constantly changed. And there was between 150 to 300,000 Jews in Lithuania, depending on how you drew the borders. Poland had 3 million Jews. Warsaw alone probably had more Jews than all of Lithuania. Yet this tiny country in the backwoods didn't produce one international yeshiva, but it produced them by the dozens. There was Volozhin, there was Mir, there was Lomsh, there was Kelm, Slobodka, Telz, Radin, Ponovich, Vardik, Kamnitz, Grodno, Slutsk, Kletsk, you name it. And it is unbelievable how a tiny country like this could do this. So this is what the gift saw in Telz, but he saw more. He used to say, his Rebbe Rav Am Yitzchok, he learned by his father of Yosef Leib. Yosef Leib by Reb Lazer. Reb Lazer by Reb Yisrael Salanter. Reb Yisrael Salanter by Reb Zundel Salanter. Reb Zundel by Reb Itzo and Reb Chaim Volozhin. And Reb Chaim by the Gaon. And the Gaon, he said, that was Malach Hashem Tzevokos. He saw Torah Misinai. And this was his whole life, to learn this Torah and to teach this Torah. And to bring it to America and all over. Telz was the great Marbitze Torah. This was in Europe yet. They had Talmidim that went to Russia, that went to Poland, that went to Latvia, that went to Hungary, that went to Germany, that went to Eretz Yisrael. The Blazer had a Talmud that could be a Rav HaRoshi of Yerushalayim and a Rosh Yeshiva in Hebron and a chief Rav in South Africa, Reb Itzo Kosofsky, Zichron Levracha, was his Talmud. And a Talmud saying Shurim in a university in Germany. They knew no bounds. When we came to Telz, we used to hear the motto, Nochazar Chuvin, Yeder Einer darf sitzen und lernen Torah, und wird groß in Torah, and gain Umatum the ganze Amerika, schaffen Torah in Yiddishkeit. After such a churban, everyone has to sit and learn and become great in Torah and go all over America. But America wasn't the bounds. They sent all over, to South Africa and all over, to learn Torah, to spread Torah. And they were totally against the polarization. Gifter told me he was greatly disappointed when the Bnei Yeshiva went out and started to build Bate Midroshim for themselves in Shtiblach. He says he was hoping they would interject themselves into the shuls. Whatever they built in Cleveland, they built for the city. They built a day school for the city. They built a mikveh for the city. They didn't come to build for themselves. The Rabbonim used to tell them, New York. They said, New York? What will be with the other Jews? They knew no bounds. Torah is limitless and must spread in all directions. This is what he saw, and this is what he wanted to plant. Following his forebears, the great Rebbe Meir and Bottle that started the foundation in America. But there was something specific that he always pushed and always spoke about. He said there's Madreges HaMitzvahs and there's Madreges Atora. Everyone knows or should know that the Lev and Nefesh, the heart of Klal Yisrael, is the Torah and Tarya'at Mitzvahs. And the Bnei Aliyah, those who know more, know it's the heart of the whole universe. But what many do not know is there's Madreges on Mitzvahs, there's the level of Mitzvahs and the level of Torah. And they are not to be compared to each other. One must seek and must yearn and must strive not for the level of mitzvahs, but for the level of Torah. Because a person's level of mitzvahs is in comparison to his level in Torah. His mitzvahs are mitzvahs to the degree of his Torah, of his bond to Torah, his depth in Torah, his hasmoda in Torah, his knowledge of Torah. And this is what the Chazal tell us. Therefore, the Le'elam HaTalmud Kodem. Talmud must come first. Shehatalmud mevi lidei maaso. It is Talmud, it is Torah that will bring you to deeds. Ve'ena maaso mevi lidei Talmud. Deeds will not bring you to to Torah. And we cannot compare the two together. And he said this was a great error in America and other places to compare the two. Because the Chazal tell us, ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. A mitzvah is a candle and Torah is unending light. And just as one cannot compare a candle to the sun, so can one not compare a mitzvah to the Torah. Not only that, but where does the candle get its light from? Gets it from the sun. Where does the mitzvah get its light from? It gets it from Torah. The Maharal of Prague elaborates on this endlessly. And he explains, Torah is not part of this world. Therefore, it is not bound by limitations, by physical limitations. And therefore, it is infinite. It is endless. Mitzvahs are from this world. An esrog, you need something physical. A lulav, a shefer, tefillin, tzitzis. And mitzvahs are done with the ma'aseh b'nei adam, with the deeds of people. That's physical. And therefore they have their physical limitations. And since Torah has no limitations, therefore, it's endless and spreads in all directions. So, with mitzvahs, the Shalmi in the beginning, Masech Tepeya, Reb Rachya, Reb Chia, the Kfar Tchumin, Char Omar Kala Elam, Eina Shove Le Dove Echad Mi Divrei Teira, Ve Char Omar Afilu Kol Mitzvah, Eina Shove Le Dove Echad Mi Divrei Torah. As it states, Kol Chafetzecha, Kol HaChafetzim Vayish Vabo. The Shalmi brings that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that all of my mitzvahs cannot be compared to the understanding of one word of my Torah. You hear? All of my mitzvahs cannot be compared to the understanding of one word of my Torah. How can we say such a thing? The Maharal says very simply, because if Torah is beligvul, it's without parameters, it is endless, one word of Torah is endless. Well, every mitzvah has its gvul, has its limitation, its parameter. And this is besides what the Gaon writes at the beginning of Masechta Peah, that when a person learns up a Daf Gemara, in an hour he could have hundreds and hundreds of mitzvahs, where each one is a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, which is Shokol Keneged Kula. The Gifter used to bring many times from Reb Chaim Volozhiner, where Reb Chaim would say, "Ich gebe weg alle mein Tfilos, for ein chidush halocha al pi amita shel Torah. I am prepared to give away all of my tfilos, all of my prayers, for if someone will tell me a chidush in Torah, which is emes in accordance to the Torah." We are amazed with a statement like that. Especially if Gifters would say, "Do you know what the tefillahs of Reb Chaim Volozhiner were like?" We are only amazed because we do not understand the level of Torah. And this is why the Gemara brings in Brochas, it says, Maha ner megina lefi shor, af mitzvah megina lefi shor. Just like a candle will give you light for a certain amount of time, so will a mitzvah, which is compared to a candle, protect you for a certain amount of time. Maha or megina leolam, but the endless light, which will protect you forever, the study of Torah will protect you forever. And on this, the Maral says the same via the same explanation. Because it's beligvul mitzimtzum. It's without any boundaries, without any parameters. And this is why we find that mitzvahs have a mokum and a zman. Many mitzvahs you could fulfill dafken Eretz Yisrael. Many mitzvahs you cannot fulfill in other places. Mitzvahs have a zman. Certain mitzvahs, sukkahs is only in sukkahs. Chometz and matzahs dafken during Pesach. But Torah, the learning, you can learn about the korbanos, zvachim, menachos, anytime. Chutz la'aretz, Eretz Yisrael. You can learn about Sukkot on Pesach and vice versa. I just recently saw in a sefer written by a Gaon who lived about 250 years ago, where he brings all of what we're saying now, and then he brings from the Zeir HaKodesh and from the Kisvei Arizal, and I was amazed. He says, Madregas of Esek HaTorah Bahai Alma, Arehi Gedola Mi Madregas Elam Habo. When a person sits and is Misamek, and he learns Torah Lishmo, and with depth, in this world, he says this is a higher level than the world to come. Because in the world to come, it states that you will be nana miziva shechina. You will have pleasure from the radiance of the shechina. While learning Torah in this world is shechina mamash, is the shechina itself. And then he writes, again he brings from the Arizal, the tainuv, the joy, that one witnesses from Torah in this world. He says, even though sometimes it might be musteris, sometimes it might be subconscious, he says, is greater than the joy, than the time of Gan Eden. Now these are concepts that seem to be very, very foreign. But they weren't foreign to the Rosh Hashiva. He lived this. He breathed it. We'd ask him the question. He said this was the life in Litta. So we asked him the question. Well, Litta, not everybody was a Talmud Chochm. Not everybody learned. The fact is, Litta was not famous for the quantity in the yeshivas. It was famous for the quality. The Havdil Elef Havdolas, it was the Oxfords and the Cambridges. But everybody sent someone to a cheder. But as you know from your own zedes, even many times in cheder they had to drop out. Yeshiva Ktano, that only those who were most privileged, the best, went on to Yeshiva Ktanos. Yeshiva Gdolos, just a handful went on. So what about the rest of the people? And he would answer as follows. He would say the young saplings would nestle in the shade of the giant oaks. He says, Emes. But all of the people of the litter that he knew understood this concept. They understood that the greatest level in the world is to become great in Torah. The height of the Shirkeima of Klal Yisrael was to seek greatness in Torah. And everyone yearned for it. And everyone directed themselves for it. And everyone wanted it. And everyone would take from it. It would be like they would see a beautiful tree with fruit. They wouldn't pluck the fruit. They wanted the tree. They wanted it for themselves, and if they couldn't have it for themselves, they wanted it for their children. How many stories do we find of fathers or mothers carrying children on their backs to other cities so they should learn Torah? Their yearning was not that my son should become great in mitzvahs, that my son should be a frumah yid. He says, that you didn't hear in Litta. Never heard. I want my son to be a frumah yid. No. I want my son, says Ein Grois b'Torah, that he should be great in Torah. That you heard. Remotely, the older Rosh Yeshiva used to tell us the story that his mother, Ola Shalom, every time she had a son, she used to say, Erved Zayin Arov from a Grois Shtot. He will be a Rov from a great city. And then the people used to say, after a number of children, they used to ask her, there's not that many great cities around. She used to say, we will build more cities. This is what Ramotel used to say on his mother. See? They used to talk that of the Balabatim that would sit and learn in Litta. They used to tell the story, there was a man who didn't have time to learn during the week. Bottle used to tell this story. Friday night, long winter Friday nights in Litta, they used to go to bed after the Suda, he and his son, get up at 12 midnight and learn for 8 hours till Shachris, every Friday night. And Gifter used to speak of the shoemaker. In the afternoon, his shop, he would close the door and lock it. And you could hear the niggin of the Gemara coming from there. He'd learn. Wouldn't go home because they lived in a small hovel and it was full of children. Rabbi Avraham Chaim Lapin, Zichron Livracha, from South Africa, who was there at that time in Telz, he used to tell me that when the Rav, Rabbi Yitzchok, would give his shiur, and it was a very, very high level shiur, enormously high level shiur, when he would give his shiur, when he would give a shiur, he said, Balabatim from the city would come. There were many that had learned in yeshivas and then went into businesses, but carried on learning. They'd come to that shiur. And they would ask him during the shiur. And he told me, he says, you could see the Rav brace himself when they would start asking. They were great lomdim. These were Balabatim. They spoke of Itzi the Shmid. Yitzi the Shmid was the blacksmith. The great Ramotel Pogromansky used to stay by him. He said he knew nothing. Knew nothing, never learned. But a bocher from the Mechina would come by, he would stand up full height. And he would say, Talmud Chochem. Even the Goyim, they would say, wanted the Bochrim to come through their land because they held it would be brocha. They yearned. Their goal was not to be a Jew that performed mitzvahs, but they wanted Torah and nothing less. This, what we're speaking about, excuse me 1 minute, please. Speaking about, I saw here, when we came here almost 30 years ago, countless cases, countless times, I could see it. For example, there was a Jew here from Grodno. His name was Chana. He used to have a shop in town. I walk in there one day, and he's pale, and he's trembling. And I said, Chana, what happened? Did you have a holdup? No. So what happened? He was shaking. He says, first time in my life it ever happened. First time in my life. I said, what happened? He said, I got a new secretary. A mashulach came into my shop. I was in a meeting. All the secretaries always knew that if a mashulach comes in, they have to call me from the meeting. She didn't know. She told him I'm busy. He went away. I came out. The first time in my life that a mashulach should walk out of my shop where I didn't give him something. I went out into the street. This was downtown, the Ilov Street, in the heydays. I went out in the street looking for him. I couldn't find him. The father had told him, never turn anyone away. Now that's a Madregan stalker. But I'm wondering, where does that come from? Where does it come from? One day I found out. Come to visit him one day, he tells me another story. He said that his Zayda was dying. And they came to Cheder. He was learning in Cheder, and they came to Cheder and they said, come quick, your Zayda is very sick. You must come and see him. They wanted the Zayda to see the Enochol before he died. He told me this. He came, his Zayda says, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be in Cheder. He says, they told me to come to see you because you're sick. He says, all right, thank you for coming, but quickly go back to Cheder. The Zayde is minutes before dying. What's on his mind? That his Enochol is missing a few psukim in Chumash. This is on his mind. A few minutes before dying. Aha! Now I understand. So a Talmud maybe lidei mitzvahs, vein a mitzvahs maybe lidei Talmud. If you come from such Torah, then I understand why you were shaken up when the Meshulach went out of your shop that you never gave him. There's another case. The late Reb Shimonovitz, Zichayim Levracha, a Talmud Chochem. A son of his went in for an operation and unexpectedly died. And he was broken. And we went to the Levaya, one of the largest Levayas I ever saw here in South Africa. Over 1,000 people. But everyone knew him. And Reb Shimonovitz was totally broken. As the throngs of crowds are moving towards the kever, someone comes over to me with a message. Rabbi Shimonovitz wants to see you. I said, now? He says, yeah, now. I fight my way through the throngs and the crowds, way to the head. I come next to Rabbi Shimonovitz. He grabs me by my hand and he says, stay with me. We're almost by the grave. Stay with me. I want to introduce you to some of the people here who have come to the Levaya that can help you with the yeshiva. So my first reaction, the man is suffering from shock. What can you expect? No, it's nicht gelecht. Man suffering from shock. What can you expect? Lost a son? So I said, nicht jetzt, das kann sein später. Not now, that can be later. He grabs my hand and he says, jetzt, now. Das wird sein a schuss für my Sohn. It'll be a schuss for my son. He learned by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. He learned by Rabbi Baruch Be'er. This is what Torah was. This is what Torah was to them. It wasn't a plain thing. This was Kihem Chayenu Ve'erech Yomeinu. Afilu Dover Echon Mi Torah. Kol HaMitzvah Sheba'ilam Is Einishom Ele Dover Echon Mi Torah. All of the mitzvahs do not equal one word of Torah to these people. And then there was another case, another maestro. Walk into a shop one day. It was the late Nochem Malamed. And I see he has a Gemara under the counter. So I say, Yashukeach. He looks at me with a twinkle in his eye and he says, For was gebt ihr mir a Yashukeach? Why are you giving me a Yashukeach? I said, A Yid sitzt in shop and lernt Gemara, kommt mir Yashukeach. A Jew sitting in the shop and he's learning Gemara, he deserves a Yashukeach. He says, Kommt mir a Yashukeach. Kommt der Eibishter a Yashukeach. As me hot, be gesund and Möglichkeit. So a reingucken in a Gemara. He says, I deserve the Yashukeach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu deserves the Yashukeach. That I have the help and the opportunity that I can look into a Gemara. He let learned and tells. I told this story over to Rav Gifter. And when I said I gave him a Yashukeach, a Yid sits in the shop learning Gemara, Rav Gifter nodded his head. But then when I told Rav Gifter what he told me, Rav Gifter started to pace up and down the floor and he said, Oi, he says, Litvishi Yidin. Litvishi Yidin. Oi, he says, Litvishi Yidin. This is what he said. From this I can understand there was a letter which was found in 1620. I read this in the history book. It was written by the Jews of Vilna to the Vad L'Arba Arotzes. There was the famous Vad L'Arba Arotzes, that the center of Torah at that time was in Poland and Hungary. And they had a organized kehillah where four lands would come together. And they would meet a few times a year and make takonas and such things. And Vilna wanted entry into this organization. And they wrote to Vilna and they said, we don't know if we want to accept you. We haven't heard of you that much. See, Vilna was the backwards. We are Gedele Torah. So Vilna wrote them back. And I understand what they mean now. They didn't write them back about our gate Rabbonim, because in Vilna, what should I tell them? We have Rabbonim Tamir Hachomim. How can a Rav not be a Talmid Chacham? He has to pass in Shilas. They didn't write them back about the great Rosh Yeshivas. What should we tell them? We have Rosh Yeshivas Tamir Hachomim. How can a Rosh Yeshiva not be a Talmid Chacham? He has to say Shurim. They wrote them back that we have at least, they said, at least 300 Bali Batim and Bali Melocha, 300 working men that are bekeen in the Talmud Bavli Yushalmi, that are fluent in Bavli Yushalmi. That's what they wrote. That's our claim to fame. When they heard that, they let them in. They let them in. This was the Torah that the Gifter saw. And this is what he wanted to plant. here and always spoke about it. He was an outspoken. He was fearless. And nobody became free of his criticism or his rebuke, public or private. And he rebuked American shallow Judaism because they have empty shells for mitzvahs. He would rebuke mitzvahs anoshim ulamabel, when people fulfilled mitzvahs by rote. A mitzvah without a neshama, he would call it. A mitzvah without a spirit. A mitzvah is in accordance to how much Torah is infused in it. He would rebuke the secularization of mitzvahs, void of kedusha, to emulate the secular world. He would rebuke the Christianization of mitzvahs. Torah, he would say, and not Frumkeit. Torah and not religion. And he would elaborate enormously, which unfortunately we do not have time to go into this evening. But mitzvahs have to emanate from the person's Torah. There was no dichotomy in him. His Torah was a fire, and it manifested itself in all of his actions. If there was an injustice done, others would be silent, he would bring the walls down. If he would see someone's parnosa being taken away from them unjustly, he would go on the warpath. I remember the case which I mentioned a few times. This was during my time in the yeshiva. We moved over to Wycliffe. They had to get a new cook. She was a widow. And then some of the elements in the yeshiva, the more extreme elements, said they weren't satisfied with her. They didn't think she was frum enough. And they said, look, they found a pot over there and a pan over here. Nah, it's not a level for a yeshiva. And they came to Rav Gifter. And he threw them out. Literally threw them out. He says, Ge arayis from Danet. Go out from here. Went to other Rosh Yeshivas and they said, they don't understand. They're coming on a shlichus mitzvah. And Rav Gifter throws us out. And the Gifter said, I'm not sacrificing my Elam Habo to be mishtatef in being ready for an almona from her panoso, to chase away an almona, a widow, from her livelihood. And he saw me. He didn't know whether I was involved or not. I wasn't involved. But he said, Tail up from Danet. He bottled me teicha edo haroa zeh. He told me. People didn't know. That was not Rav Gifter. That was what the Gemara says, Talmud Chochem derosach deraisuhu derosach. Talmud Chochem becomes angry, that's the Torah in him that's becoming angry. Rav Gifter had assessed that the remote possibilities that something might go wrong in the kitchen of Telzi Yeshiva would be a shade of a shade of a shade of a problem, but at the same time he knew what the Torah and the Gemara says, Kol almona ve'yosum le'sanun. Do not oppress a widow or an orphan. Imane sane esoy kimtzok yitzak elai. Because if you do, they will cry to me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. And Shemoa Eshma Tzaakosoi, and I will listen to their cries. V'chora api v'harakti eschem v'chorev. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will get angry and I will kill you with a sword. And your wives will be widows. And your children will be orphans. This is what stared Reb Gifter in the eyes, which is more chomer 1,000 times than all of the shilas in the kitchen. That was the Torah that was burning in him, where he became fiery at the idea that they should oppress an almona in the Telzi Yeshiva. That was more of a desecration of Torah than the shilas in the kitchen. And this was his life and everything. I remember once, Migodlat Cotton, I was once at a bris milu with him, and they gave him the keshel brocha to make the brocha on it. He looked, and he was had a problem. He says, give me a plate or something, because mach yenem's carpet schmutzig. Some wine will fall out of the cup of wine, it'll fall on the other person's carpet. This was not a keshel brocha, this was baba kama to him. His esrig was perek lulav agozel. His sukkah was perek ayoshon. His relations, interrelations with people was baba kama, baba tziya, and baba basra. And this was the derech of gedele eilam. And this, he chastised and he criticized, whether it was American Orthodoxy or German Orthodoxy or Hasidim or Lithuanians who had strayed, or he called out to those, I quote, to those who called themselves Machne HaTorah, or he wrote Yesh Ke'elo Gam Heim Mibein HaCharedim Hareim V'teira Rak Mitzvahs. There are those who call themselves Charedim and they see in the Torah only mitzvahs. And they have lost the concept of Gedolei Torah, and even his own yeshiva was not free from his fire when it was deserved. But when he chastised and he rebuked, it was with lev and nefesh and tzar. You could see it was a man that was talking who was broken, because he had seen this in Lithuania and had gone up in flames. And his dream was to see that it would grow again in America. And from here emanated his all Avedas Hashem. The way to learn, and his concept of yeshivas. His concept of yeshivas were that everyone must have a chance to learn. If you see Simon Baruchan, you can grow, carry on. If you don't see Simon Baruchan, you cannot grow. He says the yeshiva is not the place for you. He couldn't stand bench warmers. He would call them fetch the benkel. He loved the person that was productive. He loved industry. Productive in Torah, carry on. Carry on to endless heights. You cannot be productive in Torah. He couldn't understand, what is a bocha like that doing in the yeshiva? It's not good for the yeshiva, but it's mekalkel tzatzma, it will ruin him. Once I was learning with him and a bochra came over. I saw he was very curt in his answer. And this bochra was a bochra that was not serious in the yeshiva. And then he turned to me and he said, "What is a bochra in the yeshiva? What's a bochra like this doing in the yeshiva? He should go out and learn a profession or a trade and become productive." To him, yeshivas was tells, where they produced the greatness in Torah that from here went out Torah to a world that the whole world yearned for. Kolel. When I came to Telzi Yeshiva, there was 200 or 300 in the yeshiva and there was one in the Kolel. Later on, They expanded the Kollel to 5, and it was the cream of the cream of the yeshiva. Died. Ramotl named the Kollel after him, and he wanted to expand it more. So he expanded it to about 14. They lowered it a notch. No longer was it the cream of the cream, it was just the cream. I was in the Kollel then. Rosh Hashivas had made up that one of the Rosh Hashivas should take a turn once a month to come in and say a shir in the Kollel, because we didn't have any shurim. Month goes by, the gifter doesn't come in. Next month goes by, doesn't come in. So they asked me, they knew I was close to him, go ask him, why isn't he coming in? I come to him. I tell him what the problem is. First he wants to, I see mishtamet, he doesn't want to talk about it. Then he saw I wasn't satisfied. He says, I'll tell you the truth. He says, das ist nicht kein Kollel. It's not a Kollel. I'm not coming in. They had lowered it a notch, and from that day on, the gifter never walked into the Kollel. He said, a Kollel in Litta was those that were meyuchad to become gedolei rosh yeshivas and gedolei rabbonim went into the Kollel. He says, a program of Yiddishkeit, a program for Yiddishkeit, yes it is. Aber mit kim kedel das ist nicht. It's not a Kollel. And from that day on, he would never walk in. This was his life, and it emanated. From his great toil and labor, his ceaseless thirst for Madreges HaTorah, which there that brought the light into the Madreges HaMitzvahs and the Maisim. It's getting late now. I'll have to bring to a close. I saw the Rosh Yeshiva a few years ago, and his keches were waning. I asked him a number of shilas. He answered them. He cast light on all of the problems I had. Enormous light. But he didn't have his normal speed, which actually made it much easier to speak to him. Then, as I was leaving, I decided I'll try another Shiloh. So I asked him on a very difficult Rambam. And that already he didn't want to answer, and he jokingly said, he says, when you write your Sefer on the Rambam, you'll answer that Rambam also. That was all he said. The next time I saw him, 2 years later, he was in good spirits, the Rosh Yeshiva. He sat, he spoke, and the Rebbetzin. But he didn't talk in Divrei Torah. It was too difficult for him. And mostly he listened. I had a shaila, which was bothering me for a long time. And I had raya's, very good sources and arguments that it should be mutter. But contemporaries fought him after it. I asked a Talmud Chochem in Eretz Yisrael to ask some of the Gdalim there. And he wrote me back that two of the Gdalei Dor asked it behechlet. And I was very perturbed with it. So I came, and then I asked him, can I ask a Shaila? He says, yeah. So I put forth the whole discussion. And then I told him the two of the great Gedalim in Eretz Yisrael asked it. He thought, he grimaced. He got that angry look on his face, and he says, ich verstehe nicht, was das so sein osser. For was Fussel Zain Usser. He said three times, clenching his fist. He says, I don't understand. Why should that be Usser? For Vus Fussel Zain Usser. Three times he repeated it. I asked the Rebbetzin, because he wasn't talking and learning the whole evening. I said, was the Rosh Yeshiva cognizant of everything that we're saying? She said, the Rosh Yeshiva, when he doesn't know the answer, he doesn't answer. When he's not certain, he doesn't answer. Only when he's certain. This is what she told me. Next time I came, that was about 3 years ago, he smiled, but was unable to talk at all. Far nigzar alov shalei legalis od mi'orte rosoi. The decree was passed where he no longer was granted permission to light up the world with his Torah. Even though this great Rosh Yeshiva died, but not in this world and not in the next world, the light of his Torah not only burns forever, but will be pouring v'rovim. It will multiply and produce and reproduce in this world to all of the Talmidim that he taught Torah to. In the next world, the Gemara tells us in Perek Araya, Omer Bechia Barashi, Omarav Talmidei Chachomim Ein Lemanucha Loi Be'elam Hazeh Ve'loi Be'elam Habo. Talmidei Chachomim have no rest in this world or in the next world. Shenema Yechu Me'echayel Elchoyu Yeroe El Hashem B'tzion. Because they go from one level to the other level to the other level, the next world, they bring them higher and higher. The Maral writes on that, Leheresh lonu ki ha-Talmud chochom shiyesh lo ha-Torah ein el malosei gevul v'hashlomo. This is to teach us that the Talmud chochom, the Torah is with him. It's not over there, it's with him. There is no limit to it. It's infinite, like the Torah itself. And if it's infinite, then it can never be complete. But constantly, there is the thirst and more thirst. In the next world, I see the Rebbe in two images. I see him as the young man I knew, standing as a young prince, saying a shiur, giving forth more light of Torah. But even more than that, more than a magid shiur, he was always a Talmud. He always wanted to learn more. He always learned. He always grew. I see him sitting in the Beis HaMedrash of Rebbe Kiva, like a Talmud b'fnei Rabbi. This was his essence. Coming b'zraya, with aggressiveness, to Rebbe Kiva. Ba'er dvorecho, explain your words. Asking him all of the difficulties that he had in this world. And saying to Rebbe Kiva, what Rebbe Tarfon said to Rebbe Kiva, Akiva, Akiva, kol haperish mimeko, keperish min achai. Akiva, whoever separates themselves from you is separating themselves from life in essence. This was his life in this world. and this will be his life in the next world. We give our heartfelt birches tanchumim to the Avelim, to his wonderful Rebbetzin, who stood by his side all of these years. She told me they just recently celebrated on Hanukkah the 60th anniversary. She once told me, whatever the Rosh Yeshiva wanted, I went along with. I never disagreed, I never vetoed any of his plans, except one, she said. When we moved into our new home, we had a finished basement. And he wanted to make his study down there. And she said that was the only time I vetoed it. For two reasons, she said. Firstly, basements in America with all the snow and everything are damp. So she was afraid for his health. Secondly, she said, he would go down there for 5 or 6 hours, I would never see him anymore. But otherwise, whatever he wanted, I did. And for the past number of years, she gave her entire life to nurse him and to care for him through the prolonged illness. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu give her a wonderful reward in totality. Chaim and Sholem, Nachas from her wonderful family, to the children, the Bechor Binyamin, the oldest daughter Shlomis, Luba, Chasha, Reb Zalman, Reb Yisrael. Kodesh Baruch Hu should give them the keach, the chokhma, to continue in the ways of their great father. Zchusei HaGodl, may his great merit yogein aleihem the aleinu. I'll call Israel. Amen.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@yGj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.